We're discussing the role of digital currency in our financial system on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The largest cryptocurrency platform in our country drew the attention of Wall Street Wednesday, making its initial public offering on the NASDAQ. The startup Coinbase has attracted millions of cryptocurrency enthusiasts using the platform to exchange shares of Bitcoin and other digital currencies. Are you in? Do you own digital assets? What do you own? What questions do you have about the crypto industry and what it means for paying for everyday stuff? 800-642-1234 to join in. Lamont Black is an associate professor of finance in the Drury House College of Business at DePaul University. Lamont, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Great to be here.
Good morning. We also have Dana Peterson, chief economist and center leader of economy, strategy, and finance at the Conference Board of Business Research Group. And fun fact, she holds a master's in economics from UW-Madison. Dana, welcome to you and welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, Dana, let's start with you. Coinbase makes a big splash on Wall Street. Explain what Coinbase is and what it does to help us give a better sense of how cryptocurrency functions in our world.
Sure. Well, Coinbase is a type of cryptocurrency, and a cryptocurrency is essentially a form of private money. Essentially, it's based upon something called distributed ledger technology. And that technology basically is a secure database whose core properties like immutability, which means you can't change it, security, and real-time tracking make it very well suited for specific processes like, for example, creating a currency. And so it's been, about a decade in the making for this particular type of currency, and now it's gone public.
Lamont, what are your thoughts about Coinbase going public?
Well, I think this is a great moment for cryptocurrency. When we first heard about it 10 years ago, it was individuals, it was people who were kind of dabbling on the fringes, but now it's gone mainstream and more people are investing. And crypto is kind of the new hot investment that people are interested in. I think that's part of why we're talking about it. So I think this is a great moment for crypto.
Yeah, so it was super underground a decade ago. Now you're saying it's gone mainstream. There's a surge in the trading and investing of Bitcoin, other cryptocurrencies. What does this indicate to you when you look at the value of cryptocurrency?
Well, in the past, there's been concerns about a bubble in Bitcoin. You know, at the end of 2017, when it reached 20,000, people were very excited about it then, but then it crashed and fell down to lower prices. But the surges that we've seen recently seem like they might be a little more sustainable, and I don't expect prices to continue to go up forever. You know, that's just not true for any asset class, but I think the optimism is real, and I think there's a great future in this new space of digital currency, and people want to be part of it.
You know, Dana, we've heard PayPal accepts cryptocurrency, Overstock, Home Depot. What do you make of retailers and actually using cryptocurrency for everyday transactions?
Well, I think this is certainly a really new development and quite substantial that you're seeing this adoption by retailers. Before, retailers are mainly just considering cryptocurrencies or even just the technology, the blockchain technology, as a way to kind of track and produce cargo. But now they're starting to accept this as a valid method of payment. There's certainly some issues around that, just given the fact that, again, these are private currencies. So that means it's not widely held by most of the population. And so you could see some issues around broadening or widening of income equality and these kind of gaps that we've seen definitely proliferate during the pandemic.
You mentioned, Dana, blockchain technology. Can you explain kind of the underside of cryptocurrency and what blockchain technology means and how it works?
Certainly the professor on the line is the expert in this.
Lamont, how about you go for blockchain technology and give us a bit of a working knowledge?
Sure. So blockchain is the technology behind Bitcoin and most other cryptocurrencies. And the way it works is rather than having a record of payments that's stored by banks or by the government, it's a network of users who are tracking value together on, as Dana said, a distributed ledger. And so you can think of it as like an accounting system, but rather than individual institutions keeping track of your like bank account and how much money is in that account, there's a single ledger which has a record of all those digital wallets or other blockchain applications. And then that ledger is transparent and public. So this was the real innovation of blockchain, is rather than keeping all those accounts private and then updating them through some sort of third party, it's actually on the internet. You can look up the Bitcoin blockchain and see every transaction that's being made. But then you need some sort of system to maintain that ledger. And that's what we refer to as, in the case of Bitcoin, as mining. So the miners are updating the ledger to record any sort of transactions or changes. And therefore, blockchain is not a system of individual accounts. It's a shared ledger that everyone can see. And therefore, there's applications well beyond cryptocurrency. Any sort of business network that needs to share information, using a blockchain is a great way to create that shared reference point on that distributed ledger.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about cryptocurrency with Lamont Black there, an associate professor of finance at DePaul University. Dana Peterson is here, chief economist at the Conference Board, as we look at the role of cryptocurrency in our financial system, how it works, taking your questions, 800-642-1234. David is joining us from Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David. What would you like to say about Bitcoin? David, are you there? I think we lost David. But
the Bitcoin and
stuff.
Oh,
there we go.
But there's a guy out in Texas has a totally new system, Hashgraph. It uses Gossett Protocol. And instead of having maybe less than 10 transactions a second, this thing could go like close to 100,000 transactions a second. I mean, if you're going to run a modern economy, you have to have more throughput. But his system is patented, where the others are open source. So it depends on how he does it.
Yeah, David, thank you. We missed a little bit of your opening, but Lamont, I think David is saying that, you know, some of this currency takes too much computer processing power. What do you know there?
Yeah, so that's been one of the concerns and even criticisms of Bitcoin, is with blockchain, you have these blocks of transactions, and those blocks have to be verified by the mining network. And therefore, it is relatively slow, and the amount of transactions is not large. And so there have been different attempts to address that. There's something called Bitcoin Cash, which attempted to have more transaction size. But I think David's right. You know, there are other cryptocurrencies that are now out there which are specifically designed to have greater throughput in terms of the number of transactions. So if we want crypto to be able to compete with the Visas or MasterCards of the world, which have, you know, millions of transactions per minute, then we need them to have that scalability. So it's not clear whether Bitcoin can do that, but that's part of why we're seeing more and more new cryptocurrencies which are designed specifically for that purpose.
Ethan is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Ethan. What is on your mind with cryptocurrencies?
Hi. Yeah, you guys were just talking about Bitcoin and how some people are worried that it may be a bubble. I just wanted to bring up ask what the guest has to say about other kinds of coins that are unlimited in the amount of coins that will be mined, whereas Bitcoin is finite and there will eventually be none left to mine.
Yeah, Ethan, thank you. Dana, what are your thoughts on a bubble and, you know, having a controlled amount of currency versus unlimited?
Well, I mean, there are definitely two things. So if you have a limited amount, so the fixed amount with blockchain, like once it's all mined, it's gone, then you do have the potential for run-ups in the value, right? Because if something becomes more scarce, then potentially, you know, in economic speak, it becomes much more expensive. So you could have that happen. But, you know, I don't think we're quite there yet. But even still, a lot of what's the valuation of these currencies right now are based upon trading. So we saw, you know, this about a decade ago where you had this big run up in the value of Bitcoin, and then it fell, and then you didn't hear about it for about a decade, and now it's back, right? So you're going to have a lot of this is going to be dependent upon how people view the value of this thing. And I think certainly now relative to 10 years ago, there is more of a movement to adoption. So for example, central banks, Central Bank of China has just issued its own digital currency as a way to kind of challenge the US as the world's global currency. And so certainly it makes sense that you see the valuation of all the other private types of currencies rising.
Yeah, and we'll pick up more on the global implications in a moment with China there. Dana Peterson, chief economist at the Conference Board. We have Lamont Black of DePaul University's Business College. Do you use Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency? Why? How did you get started? What questions do you have about how it's used? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the crypto world and the future of digital assets in our financial system. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Digital currencies are now being accepted for payment by major corporations, Overstock, PayPal, Visa, as we've been talking about. Is this a sign that digital assets could be used to make direct purchases like the morning cup of joe at Starbucks? Starbucks is in a testing phase. What phase are you in with digital currencies? We have Chief Economist Dana Peterson from the Conference Board and Lamont Black, an Associate Professor of Finance at DePaul University. They're with us for the hour. Gary is joining us from Ripon with a question. Gary, hi.
Hi. I actually have two questions. The first is, are cryptocurrencies money? And the second is, as you described how it works with computers and blockchains, does this mean that any transactions that I make using cryptocurrencies, including the most minute ones, will be public knowledge?
Lamont, can you take those?
Sure. So on the first one, is cryptocurrency money? I think this is a question that's been asked since the beginning of Bitcoin, and it does raise the question of, well, what is money? When I teach money in banking, I typically use the three characteristics. It's a medium of exchange, meaning you can pay for stuff with it. It's a store of value, and it's a unit of account. And we've definitely seen Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies used to buy goods and services. So I think it can function as money. I think the bigger question many people ask is it a store of value, like gold or bank deposits? And I think because Bitcoin is so volatile, that has given people some concern. That's part of why some people don't spend it, because they want to hold it more like an investment. So I think it's a good question. And I think over time, as Bitcoin prices and other cryptos stabilize, I think it will function more as money and less as a form of investment. So that's kind of my long-term view. And then on the
transactions, will they be revealed on what Gary is purchasing everywhere?
Yes, that's a great question. So this comes back to how blockchain works. So what's interesting about blockchain is it is public in the sense of any transaction is viewable on the internet. So you could go to like blockchain.com and actually observe all of the Bitcoin transactions. But what is private is the identity of the person who owns that digital wallet. So your digital wallet will have kind of this long string of characters and numbers to identify it on the public blockchain, but no one would be able to associate that with you, Gary. So they wouldn't know whether it's you buying or selling. So it's very public as this maintained digital ledger, but also very private in the identity of the wallet owner.
Gary, thanks so much. Mary is now with us from Pewaukee with questions about the environmental impact. Mary, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, as I heard on NPR yesterday, I guess I would say thumbs down for Mother Nature. I call her Mona, first two letters of each. Anyway, and they say that the use of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, the mining, it takes a lot more energy than what solar energy actually right now is saving. So could you comment on that, please?
Dana, can you field this on the environmental impact of cryptocurrencies?
Sure, absolutely. I think that certainly the amount of computing power and electricity that needs to be generated to create these cryptocurrencies certainly does raise questions about whether or not it's environmentally friendly. I mean, but you could have those same questions about fiat money, which is or paper money, right? Money that's backed by a government, where certainly there's a process of cutting down trees to make the money. But the thing is that the difference is that many people are holding less cash. Much of the financial system and money that people are carrying is actually digital, right? So it's, you know, most people don't go to the bank and get cash anymore. They just, you know, use their credit, their debit card for making transactions. They use credit cards. So certainly, you know, both systems require computers, but the fact that, you know, again, that to even enter the system that you need to purchase, you know, a stadium full of computers and then, you know, run them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, certainly doesn't speak well for protecting Mother Nature.
Yeah, I just remember early in the pandemic, we had that coin shortage. People weren't using coins and there was an issue around there. I just want to reintroduce both of you. Dana Peterson, chief economist at the Conference Board, is with us. Lamont Black, an associate professor of finance at DePaul University. Jeremy is joining us from Eau Claire. Jeremy, hi. Go ahead on cryptocurrency.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to mention just my favorite right now is VeChain. And I'm wondering if you guys can kind of comment on just the overarching stipulation of enterprise adoption and regulation. The reason that one is my favorite is because enterprises are scooping it up. It seems like they're signing up for it nonstop. You look at Walmart, Sam's Club, DHL, they got some big hitters out there. Hmm. And then the other piece of that is the regulation side. I'm interested because they're going through a auditing firm called DNVGL, which is global. And just wondering if you guys can touch on that and maybe just explain.
Yeah. Jeremy, thank you. Lamont, you first on VeChain.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Jeremy. You know, there's been a lot of questions about how cryptocurrency will connect to the business world and enterprise applications. And, you know, I can remember even 5 years ago when I first started teaching about Bitcoin and blockchain, there was this view among some of the enterprise side of blockchain good, Bitcoin bad. You know, there was just this fear that cryptocurrency was associated with criminal activity and businesses didn't want anything to do with it. But I do think that's changing, that as cryptocurrency is becoming more mainstream and more normalized, that businesses are starting to get more interested in it again. And as you said, you know, there's a lot of blockchain applications in the business space using public blockchains like Ethereum or VeChain. And so I think we're going to see more and more of that. And then as it relates to regulation, you know, the origins of cryptocurrency were kind of anti-regulation. You know, let's do money without government, without banks. It was almost like this libertarian anarchist movement. And I think that was very compelling at the time. And there's still that element. But as cryptocurrency and Coinbase becomes mainstream, we're going to see more regulation. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's going to be have its own space where we can prevent fraud, we can prevent criminal activity, but still have digital money that can function for the whole economy.
Dana, you brought up China. Turkey plans to ban cryptocurrency as a form of payment in the coming months. That's news from out of the Wall Street Journal. What do you think other countries will do about cryptocurrency?
Well, I think there's certainly a diversity of opinions about cryptocurrency, from China's full embrace to Turkey's ban. And I think a lot of that is because there's not really much regulation out there. Do these currencies violate securities laws? Can they be properly taxed? Are they allowing illicit financial activities, including money laundering and trafficking in drugs, illegal goods, and people? And so I think that's why a lot of central banks are looking at it. In fact, a survey by the Bank of International Settlements said that 86% of 65 central banks are looking at cryptocurrencies as a way to distribute money.
Dana Peterson, chief economist at the conference board there. We have Lamont Black at DePaul University. We'll pick this up right after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the world of digital currencies and what the future holds for our financial system. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The digital currency exchange Coinbase became a publicly traded company Wednesday, making a big to-do on Wall Street. Are you watching it? Do you have digital assets? Or does crypto seem like a world away from how you think about your wallet and how you pay for things? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Lamont Black teaches courses in financial markets, data analytics, and blockchain at DePaul University. Dana Peterson is here, chief economist at the conference board. They're with us for the hour. Vicky in Mequon has questions about cryptocurrency. Vicky, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this program. It's so confusing for most of us. My question is about the Federal Reserve, and so its role in the economy is dependent on its influence and control of the money supply. So how does Bitcoin enter into this equation? Obviously it's part of our money supply, but if there's no control, what happens to inflation and access to credit and the loss of control of a government?
Yeah, such great questions, Vicky. Dana, cryptocurrencies, they're not controlled or regulated by anyone. So what does that mean in terms of the feds and issues around taxes and other regulations?
Sure. I would suggest that maybe these aren't necessarily part of the traditional U.S. money supply, because the traditional U.S. money supply is effectively managed by the Federal Reserve Board. It is a currency that's issued by the government. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, whereas cryptocurrencies are these private types of money. But nonetheless, the Federal Reserve Board, including many other central banks, are interested in this. They're looking at digital currencies to have, for example, allowing instant payments, faster settlements, and lower transaction costs, especially for cross-border payments. You can also make sure that these currencies are if you have a government-backed currency, digital currency, that means that there's greater access to people who don't have the funds and the money to build a stadium full of computers. So I think that, certainly if we can integrate cryptocurrencies into the regular money supply that's managed by the Fed, then you wouldn't necessarily have to worry about inflation. I mean, right now, the inflation that we're seeing is for these assets, right? Asset price inflation having to do with the cryptocurrencies themselves. It's not really manifesting in inflation that you and I, consumers and households face.
Lamont, you want to jump in here. Is crypto a disruptor? I mean, because it can't be, you can exchange between two people without the involvement of a central bank. It's nearly impossible for the government to police these transactions. What do you see there?
Yeah, I think Vicky's question is great. I'm actually a former economist at the Federal Reserve in Washington, and so my background is in traditional monetary policy. And, central banks typically manage money supply with the economy. So as we went into the COVID recession, the Fed started lowering rates, started doing quantitative easing as a way to increase the money supply. And that's one benefit of central banking, is that they can adjust the supply. Cryptocurrency is an alternative because the supply of the cryptocurrency is really determined by the protocol, and it's at a fixed rate. It doesn't have any human institution that's governing the supply. And some people actually find that appealing because, like in the 1970s, we had too much inflation in the U.S. because we had too much money supply. And so sometimes central banks actually can create inflation by lowering rates and so on. And so that's actually less of a risk with cryptocurrency. And so I do think it's potentially going to disrupt the way we think about monetary policy, because it is an alternative that doesn't involve human governance. It's more computer protocol. And for some people, that's much more predictable and much more sustainable.
Wow. Vicky, thank you for that. Those questions. Steve now in Dodgeville along these lines. Hi, Steve.
Hi. This is an unregulated speculative market, and as such, it will be open to fraud and manipulation. It allows criminal transactions and tax evasion. Now, there might be regulation later, but that's no guarantee of anything going on now. And there is no governing authority, and I don't see how anybody can put any faith in this at all and not expect a great disaster down the line. Thank you.
Steve, thank you. So, Steve, very concerned that this is prone to illegal activities. Lamont?
Yeah, I think Steve's right. There's still quite a bit of fraud and illegal activity. I think even among crypto enthusiasts like myself, I think we have to admit that that's still the case. And it does relate back to this nature of blockchain. If you can allow for private sort of identities to be withheld from these public transactions, which is what blockchain does, then you don't have the same kind of compliance standards that you have in banking. So many of the regulations we have in place around money transfer, like Know Your Customer, Bank Secrecy Act, the Patriot Act to prevent these types of activities, those don't exist in crypto. So Steve's totally correct. But I think what's interesting is that we are seeing a trend towards more transparency and more regulation. I don't know if anyone on the of your listeners experienced this, but in working on my taxes this year, using TurboTax, I got the question, do you have any crypto assets? Did you sell any? Did you earn a capital gain? And the IRS is starting to tax people on crypto capital gains. Now, whether people are honestly reporting that yet, I can't answer that question. But the IRS is getting interested. And one of the fascinating things about blockchain is, if you know the identity of the digital wallet, you have a full history of all those transactions. And so it's, while it has this private element, it's also incredibly transparent and traceable once you actually know whose wallet it is. And so the CIA, the FBI, they are now starting to use these blockchain records as a way to trace criminal activity. So I don't think it's going to remain unregulated forever. And I think as that transparency increases, I think it will become a more kind of democratic, transparent, safe, and regulated space.
We're talking with Lamont Black, who's an associate professor of finance at DePaul University. Dana Peterson is here, chief economist at the Conference Board, as we look at cryptocurrency in our society and what you think of it at 800-642-1234. Dana, you know, there are so many Americans who are unbanked. There are people who just can't get access to credit. What will cryptocurrency do to the wealth gap in our country? What do you see?
Well, again, if cryptocurrencies remain in the dominion of private holders, then you will potentially have a wealth gap. So, for example, you have something very new called non-fungible tokens, where essentially pieces of art are essentially turned into a type of cryptocurrency, and only the people who have access to these cryptocurrencies can purchase these things. And so all of a sudden, something that used to be somewhat of a public good is now highly commoditized. So I think if central banks are able to create cryptocurrencies that are essentially have a cash equivalent, then you can democratize these cryptocurrencies and make sure that many people have access to them, as opposed to only the folks who are wealthy enough or savvy enough technologically to buy into these private currencies, cryptocurrencies.
You know, you're talking here about tokens. There's some other jargon around coins and cryptocurrency. Ken has a question in Eau Claire. Ken, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, as other people have said, for the program. Probably about the clearest explanation I've heard of Bitcoin, including the one on NPR the other day. So very nice job by both your guests. I'm a longtime economics teacher here in Eau Claire High School. And I was glad maybe I don't have to be teaching this right now because it is rather confusing. But two questions. One, just to follow up on what you just said, is there any sort of, when people say Bitcoin, is there any sort of physical thing that's a Bitcoin? Is there a certificate? Is there a piece of paper? Is there anything that says you can show me and say, yep, I own Bitcoin right here. Look at my hand. You know, I have $3 here. I can show that to you, but I have three whatever. Is there anything that is representing it like that, a physical thing?
Lamont?
Yeah, Ken, that's a great question. So first of all, the answer to that is no. So there's no coin, there's no paper. A lot of times you'll see pictures on the internet of these, like a bee with the two lines through it on a coin. That's just a graphic image. These coins don't actually exist. So it is fully digital money. And, you know, if you're interested in this, Ken, I would encourage you to actually read the Bitcoin white paper, bitcoin.org, which the title of that paper, when it first came out in 2008, is Peer-to-Peer Electronic Cash. So it's basically, how do we do cash on the internet? Because you can't pay for stuff with physical paper and coins on the internet if you're buying from somebody on the other side of the country. And that's what PayPal tried to solve with eBay, is how do we pay for things on the internet so that then somebody can ship it to me? But that was all still based on credit cards and bank accounts. And so what Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency does is it creates a digitally native electronic cash so that you can pay for things on the internet without any physical transaction. And what I think is compelling about that is we're seeing more and more transition in our economy to the internet, to a digital economy. And so it makes sense that our money would have to evolve with that. Yes, it's not backed by the government, but it is, in a sense, money that exists on the internet. And the last part of your question about, well, how do you know whether you actually own Bitcoin? That's the nature of a digital wallet. So if the listeners haven't ever purchased Bitcoin, you can go to Coinbase.com, this recent IPO, and buy Bitcoin on Coinbase, and you will then own Bitcoin in your Coinbase account. And the blockchain is designed to create these safe and secure digital wallets, so that then you have a permanent immutable record of where that value or where that money exists on the internet, not in safety deposit box, not in, you know, the wallet in my back pocket, but it is a digital wallet which is recorded on the internet itself.
Lamont Black, DePaul University College of Business. Dana Peterson is at the conference board. Do you use Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency? How did you get started? What have you read about it? How do you feel about retailers like Home Depot, like Overstock, Microsoft's Xbox store accepting Bitcoin? Still time to talk. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our crash course in the future of crypto. Lamont Black is an associate professor of finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago. Dana Peterson is chief economist and center leader of economy, strategy, and finance at the Conference Board. By the way, much earlier in their careers, they both worked for the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in Washington. They're with us for 10 more minutes on cryptocurrency and digital assets. Brian is joining us from Stevens Point. Hi, Brian.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I'm a new investor to cryptocurrency. I started last year through an online app called Robinhood, and I'm wondering what their opinion is on investing on an app like that versus having a real digital wallet on Coinbase or a hardware wallet. Is the Bitcoin really mine? If Robinhood goes bust, could I lose whatever cryptocurrency that is technically attached to my name right now?
Hmm. Brian, thank you. Dana, you first.
I mean, I would imagine that the answer is no, because just like you could buy anything else on Robinhood, you could buy stocks, you could buy bonds. Those things belong to you. They don't belong to Robinhood. So even if Robinhood, you know, or any other platform, you know, Schwab dissolves, you still own that asset.
Lamont, what about you? What if the platform you're using goes out of business or disappears?
Yeah, I think that's a great question from Brian, because, you know, when you buy cryptocurrency through one of these exchanges or platforms, whether that's Robinhood or even Coinbase, you as the buyer of the crypto don't actually own the private key. You basically own Bitcoin that's being held by Coinbase. And so Coinbase is the custodian of that Bitcoin. And so if you think back to the history of Bitcoin, there are actually stories about large Bitcoin hacks. So one example is from Japan called Mt. Gox, which was similar to Coinbase. It was a crypto exchange where people were buying crypto, but it was being held by Mt. Gox itself. And a hacker was able to hack into Mt. Gox and basically steal that Bitcoin by acquiring those private keys. And so Brian's actually correct that, you know, if those keys are not held by the actual buyer, which they are not in the case of Coinbase, then there is some risk that the owner is facing. And so there's this very interesting development in the crypto space of what are called decentralized exchanges, where rather than the exchange holding the Bitcoin on your behalf, you as the buyer actually hold that private key in your private wallet. And so Brian mentioned like hard storage. So having that private key, which is that hash of those characters and numbers, having that on like a USB drive that you then keep in a safe place, that is the ultimate protection from any sort of internet hacking. But then the risk there, some of you listeners may have heard stories about people losing their password and not being able to recover that Bitcoin. So then you face that risk. And so for the initial user, like Brian, I would encourage Robinhood or Coinbase, because I think trying to go the kind of cold, hard storage on a thumb drive is actually riskier just from a personal management perspective. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about these custodian issues.
We heard from Ethan and Delavan, who couldn't stay with us, and notes that there have been digital finance tools that have been tokenized. Uniswap is an example. They created Unisocks, actual socks worth about $95,000 right now, Ethan says. And so what are these, Lamont, these altcoins like Peercoin, Litecoin, Dogecoin, these non-fungible tokens?
Yeah, so all of these are just elements of the cryptocurrency universe. So if you think about Bitcoin as sort of the, yeah, I mean, it's growing. And universe, I think, is not even an exaggeration. They are just proliferating at a very high rate. And some people get concerned about this. Well, how do I keep track? There's so many, but each of these are unique and different in their own way, and they serve a different purpose. And so some of the things that people don't like about Bitcoin are why these new cryptocurrencies are being created. And Dana mentioned these non-fungible tokens earlier. These are sort of not even designed to be money. They are designed to be a record of a ownership of a digital asset. And so it's using blockchain for really a very different purpose. It's not about transferring value like cash. It's about how do I know that I own this digital piece of art? Because, you know, a JPEG can be copied and distributed. And so there's no way to really maintain a consistent ownership of some digital asset. A non-fungible token is a digital wallet that has that record of ownership. And so it's I think, just a fascinating time because all of these are new innovations. We're seeing so much change, and people want to get in on it. And I think it's an interesting opportunity.
Oh, Dana, this is so fascinating. But, you know, I'm just going to put a plug in here. Leave it to the art world to make our financial system valid. What do you make of this?
Well, I mean, I think to Lamont's point, there's, you know, certainly these, like Dogecoin is kind of a joke, right, in terms of making fun of the whole Bitcoin and cryptocurrency world. But I think that there are very serious applications here. In fact, many businesses, you know, certainly are thinking about how they can use these digital currencies, and even if not even the currencies themselves, but certainly the technology behind it. For example, in the financial sector, making sure that, you know, their transactions are secure, you know, especially across borders. Again, I mentioned the retail sector where, for example, you can map the supply chains of commodities or even precious stones like diamonds. Even when you look at nonprofits, for example, there are two ways to use it. They're using these things, initial coin offerings, to raise money for startups, and even some digital currency type of things, or at least the blockchain is being used to, blockchain technology is being used to track whether or not charitable giving is actually going towards what charities are saying it's going towards. So there are a lot of really great practical uses, but again, there must be guardrails put around this. Again, making sure that we're not encouraging illicit activities and tax evasion. So I think that there's certainly a lot of practical uses for the technology behind cryptocurrencies and also cryptocurrencies themselves.
Yeah, so lots of creative uses. Lamont, in your crystal ball universe, what is the next step in the evolution of crypto?
Well, I do think that we're seeing some speculation now. So people who are thinking about this as an investment because prices are going up, I would caution them just to be careful because, you know, what goes up must come down. And I do think we're going to see a correction in this market. But going forward, I think what we're at is a tipping point. And so, you know, maybe I am, you know, I've drank the Kool-Aid. I just have to admit that, you know, if my students, they're super interested in it. They've gotten me excited about it. And so I think we're going to see more and more cryptocurrencies coming on the market. We're going to see more and more applications. One of your listeners mentioned Uniswap. Finance is being radically disrupted in this area. And so I think this is the future of money. And I'm excited to be in the generation that gets to participate in that.
Well, Lamont and Dana, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Dana Peterson, chief economist at the Conference Board. Lamont Black is an associate professor of finance at DePaul University. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.